Translation, thereafter, at the end of the millennium, the Lord himself, in the form of Rudra, the destroyer, will annihilate the complete creation as the wind displaces the clouds. Purport by His Divine Grace, Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This creation is very appropriately compared to clouds. Clouds are created or situated in the sky, and when they are displaced, they remain in the same sky without manifestation. Similarly, the whole creation is made by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His form of the Supreme Personality of God in His form of Brahma. It is maintained by Him in the form of Vishnu, and it is destroyed by Him in the form of Rudra or Shiva in all due course of time. This creation, maintenance, and destruction are nicely explained in the Bhagavad Gita as follows: Bhuta Grama Sa Evayam Bhutva Bhutva Palayati Ratyagami Vashupata Prabhavat Ahu Agame Parastas Matu Bhavanyo Vyakto Vyaktat Sanatanaha Yasa Saveshu Bhuteshu Nasyatsu Na Vinayati. The nature of the material world is that it is first created very nicely, then it develops very nicely, and stays for a number of years, even beyond the calculation of the greatest mathematician. But after that, it is again destroyed during the night of Brahma, without any resistance, and at the end of the night of Brahma, it is again manifested as a creation to follow the same principles of maintenance and destruction. The foolish conditioned soul who has taken shelter, who has taken this temporary world as a permanent settlement, has to learn intelligently why such creation and destruction takes place. The furtive actors in the material world are very enthusiastic in the creation of big enterprises, big houses, big empires, big industries, and so many big, big things out of the energy and ingredients supplied by the material agent of the Supreme Lord. With such resources and at the cost of valuable energy, the conditioned soul creates, satisfies his whims, and unwillingly has to depart from his creations and enter into another phase of life to create again and again. To give hope to such foolish conditioned souls who waste their energy in this temporary material world, the Lord gives information that there is another nature which is eternally existent without being occasionally created or destroyed, and that the conditioned soul can understand what he should do and how his valuable energy may be utilized. Instead of wasting his energy in matter, which is sure to be destroyed in due course of time by the Supreme Will, the conditioned soul should utilize his energy in the devotional service of the Lord, so that he can be transferred to the other eternal nature, where there is no birth, no death, no creation, no destruction, but permanent life instead, full of knowledge and unlimited bliss. The temporary creations of this the temporary creation is thus exhibited and destroyed just to give information to the conditioned soul who is attracted to temporary things. It is also meant to give him a chance for self-realization and not for sense gratification, which is the prime aim of all fruitive actors. Omagyanata mundasha gananjana shlakaya chakshu shumilitam jena tasma si guravena maha si chaitanya manamastana sabitam jena gurtale svayam rupa kanamayam daranti svamantikam namaja vadaya gajvada gurtale smati sada gurga vinda svamati namini namaja vadaya gajvada gurtale smati bhakta vananta svamani tinamini namaste sarasati devim gauravani pichanini nivishisha sunyavadi pastadisani. So this is a very informative purport by His Divine Grace, teaching us how we should use this valuable time, and also pointing out that any energy within the material world is Krishna's energies. It's on loan, if you like, from Krishna. It is given to the living entity to fulfill his desire for separate existence. And is Prabhupada saying, we should learn and understand what the purpose of this creation is. We are born into ignorance, therefore we do not know. We are just, isn't it, if you think about your life, you were born, you came into being, you were brought up by your mother and fathers, and you just went along your life the same way they went along their lives. And unless they were sadhu, unless they were affected by spiritual consciousness, then probably you would have began to act in a very fruitive way, looking for enjoyment in one way or another. It could be that your parents or your relatives were somewhat religiously minded, in which case you might have gone to church or you'd gone to the local temple. But generally, if you went to the local church and the local temples, you were just praying to God for a good life, isn't it? You wanted a good life, you didn't want any suffering, and you wanted everything to work out very nicely for you. You never went to God, you never went to church or the temple to desire to render service to God. You went there for your own ends. So people that come before God for their own ends, that's okay, but it is not the best place to be. Better, Prabhupada and our acharyas teach us that we should come to God as his servant. But we did not even know that we were the eternal servant of God. Jivaras Ruphoi Krishna Nitidas. We did not know that. So it is only when we came across the good fortune of bumping into the Hare Krishna devotees, actually, and ultimately the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, even the Hindus in this worldwide, frankly speaking, they did not know really too much about their culture. They knew something about their culture, of course, because the Vedas is very, very broad. And it's not that what they knew was not significant. It was, but they weren't really taught devotional service, especially in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is the very special significance of the Hare Krishna movement. And for instance, the Bay of Bengal, I'll quote Tripurari Swami, who's Sannyas Prabhupada's disciple. He said the Bay of Bengal is the biggest bay in the world. The bay is such a huge bay, and the Indian Ocean is, and it's coming from West Bengal, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. And it flows into the, it's such a huge bay, and it flows into the Indian Ocean. And the top part of the Indian Ocean meets with the Pacific Ocean, which goes across into America. So it's significant that bay is there, opens up, and the flood of love of God came across from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, as we know, the real messages of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were somewhat lost. So under Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he rejuvenated and reintroduced the teachings in a proper way, of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and through his son and Srila Prabhupada, that Bay of Bengal and the waters there from West Bengal came across into the ocean, across mixed to the Pacific, and it went right away across to the United States of America, where Srila Prabhupada was on that Jaladuta, wasn't he? And he had that wonderful journey. Before he did that journey, no one in the West knew any of these things. So this is the significance of Krishna consciousness movement. And what did Srila Prabhupada do when he came off that boat, and how did he preach? He immediately said that the scientists were cheaters. He said the scientists are cheaters, most of them are cheating. They're cheating. They're presenting things as fact. But here, this is the real science of how the creation and how the maintenance and how the destruction goes on. And to this very day, still the scientists are continuing to claim to have knowledge. They have some knowledge, of course, but we say in our line that they observe the world and then they give their subjective opinions as to what they're observing. So, and then they start to contrive what might be and what might not be, and so on and so forth. So this is what they call science. So it's not actually a fact. So a scientific theory is a collection of there's a way of, I can't remember the exact. Anyway, a scientific theory has to be based on a body of facts that repeatedly seen and tested in many circumstances. And it said that these fact-based theories are real accounts of the world. They're not guesses. So what we find in the material world is that the scientists gather information, they subjectify about what this information is, and they present it as fact-based theory. But actually, it's simply guesses of what could be and what couldn't be. But it's wrapped up and presented as facts. So Prabhupada was the first person who came to the West as an acharya and began to point these things out. And he was also a social critic as well. He criticized the way, as we see here, big industries, big houses, big empires. And he thought this was not a very good idea, because wasting your time trying to accrue many things that will eventually disappear is not very intelligent. And it's a fact, you know, when you think about it. Even in our own lives, we are not realizing that death is catching up fast with us. So everything we do is simply, in one sense, it's kind of a waste of time, in the sense that it won't stay. But in the sense of eternity, any activity that a living entity is doing is valuable, isn't it? Because we believe in karma, don't we? Right? So even if a person acts in a way that's fruitive, if he acts in a religious way or in some way that's reasonably pious, he will get the results of that piety. And therefore you could say, well, he's not completely wasting his time, because in the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that one who acts piously in his next life, if he continues on acting piously, he can learn higher aspects of culture. And when he's learning higher aspects of culture, he will be more open to understanding some truth. But that's not always the case. It can also entangle you greatly in the material world. Therefore, Janeshvara Shruta Shrubiyed Havanavanamanam. Navyetta Rottamva Tamsa Kinchana Gochram, that verse is there. That if you acquire high education, high birth, material knowledge, material wealth and prestige, these things disqualify you from approaching Krishna. Because to approach Krishna, you have to be very humble. This is one of the qualifications of knowledge. Humility is the first aspect of knowledge. And therefore, if you have much wealth, much prestige, much aristocracy, generally, generally you'll become a little puffed up, proud, and you will not be able to surrender. You can't, it says in that verse, that you can't really totally rely and depend on Krishna. You'll be depending on your own abilities and your own arrangements for happiness. And therefore, Tamsakinchana Gochara means that you're very dependent on Krishna, and that you find nothing else in your life other than Krishna. This is what's called sacrifice. We should learn to sacrifice our lives. And this is the essence of spiritual life, and we can see that in the life of, for instance, it's said that Srimati Radharani sacrifice. Everything is sacrifice for Krishna, giving all pleasure to Krishna. This is what spiritual life is all about: sacrifice, giving all pleasure to Krishna. And if you sacrifice your life like that, ultimately, by such results of sacrifice, Krishna becomes pleased in your sacrifice. And he will then, what will happen? The higher energies will descend upon us, because this is a descending process. So if we want knowledge, we want to please Krishna, the higher energies, the sanvit, sandini, hladini energies, they have to descend upon us. It's like the Sri Guru. Sri is the treasurer of love, and that's what that word could mean. Sri, the treasurer of bliss or the treasure of love. That is imparted to us from Sri Guru. And the sanvit, sandini, and the hladini, shakti, will be imparted into our hearts in such a way. So the Sandini energy is like the existence energy. So in our hearts, the existence of Vrindavan will come about. The Sanvit is the energy by which we can know ourselves, and Krishna, by which Krishna knows, and he can impart that knowledge unto us, so we'll have a clear understanding of who we are. And we'll be standing on the solid ground of the spiritual energy, and then the Ladini Shakti will be imparted into our hearts, and we'll find the higher taste. So Vishaya Vinivatane Niharashadehinam Rasavajan Rasapiyasha Padam Dristva. We have to get the higher taste. The higher taste is found through associating with sadhus who have the higher taste, then they impart that higher taste to us. So this is why the association of devotees is so important, because they feel these things. They feel a very deep connection, because that particular energy, the Sandini Samvit and Ladini Shakti, is in their hearts. And because it's in their hearts, and we humbly go before them, they bless us, because the sadhus can bless us in three ways. If you get the glance of a sadhu, a pure devotee, if he glances upon you, well, That is a wonderful thing, it says in the Shastra. Because he is looking at you, and actually you'll find that Sadhu, who is a pure devotee, is your only friend. Sulirasavarehanam, he's your only friend. Only Sadhu looks at you with no envy or no malice. He looks at you in your spiritual form. He looks like that. He doesn't look at you and, oh, you've got this body, that body, you've got this culture, that culture. There's none of that. Therefore, he's your only friend because he looks at you and he looks at your full potential, and he not only looks at you, but he gives you knowledge. So the glance of the Sadhu is very important. He's your only friend. He's your best friend. No one else is your friend in one sense, only Krishna and his pure devotee. And of course, the devotees who are following such sadhus. So if you get the glance of a pure devotee, you should consider yourself very blessed. And if you get the blessings, the sadhu might formally bless you. Hare Krishna. He might formally bless you as well. And that's also very good. So the glance, the blessings, and also the sadhu, he might actually, you may not even realize, but he is your well-wisher. He might see you, and he might be thinking about you, and he might think to himself, this is a very nice person. And then in his heart, he is thinking like that about you, and therefore you also get blessed. And when Krishna he has to follow his pure devotee. This is Krishna's nature. So the pure devotee, actually, he doesn't think he doesn't see these things in himself, but because he feels himself to be very lowly. But actually, he's full of these wonderful qualities. But the wonderful part of the qualities is he doesn't actually feel he has these qualities. He feels separation from these things. He feels he's very lowly. But in that platform of feeling lowly and separation, Krishna must descend. So therefore, you will find in your spiritual life, it will be a bit like that. Because if you're not feeling separation from your descended, and so these wonderful energy descends upon us somehow or other, and it can tidy the blessings of the higher plane upon us, then that energy, due to our pride or our offenses or something, it disappears. And therefore, we come back into the material world and we start to lament and hanker and so on and so forth. And we thought, what happened to that lovely consciousness that I was in before? So we should feel separation from that type of consciousness. Hare Krishna, we should feel separation from that type of consciousness that we had, that taste that we had. We should, I'd like to get that taste again. Why is it gone? So when you're in a condition where you're hankering for such high things, then it will descend again. So this is the, and of course, the extreme advanced devotees who are in the spiritual world, you see, when they do their meditation, when they do their japa, they have their mentally conceived spiritual bodies have already developed. They're already acting in the spiritual plane. But sometimes, for some reason or another, that plane might disappear from their hearts for a moment, and then they enter into deep separation. They always have to be with Krishna. They always have to be performing services. They always have to be. And so, like I was saying before, the great Srimati Radharani, this is her mode. She cannot live without Krishna for one second. She cannot live without Krishna. Even one second without Krishna, isn't it? It's like it's said to be a long, long time. And sometimes her friends catch her in the bushes, like listening to something. And she's like very intensely listening, and her friends are coming, what are you doing? And she's saying, I'm just listening to, because just a little further away is Krishna speaking to his cowherd friends. And she's saying to her friends how wonderful Krishna's voice is and how she must capture the nectar every moment of his voice. So this is the spiritual senses of the spiritual bodies. They're so intense that they cannot bear separation. This is real love. If you love someone, then you'll never be able to part from them. If you can part from someone, then you don't love them, really. So this, in the higher realms of spiritual consciousness, this separation is unbearable, actually. And therefore, there's a story in the Shastra regarding Srimati Radharani. She was saying, because at Kurukshetra, when Krishna meets Radharani, so-called, that Krishna left Vrindavan, he kind of in some of the Shastra it says that Krishna says to Radharani, I'm sorry that I left you. I had to leave to do some business in Mathura, and then I got entangled in all these affairs, and your love was so wonderful that I shouldn't have left you, and I'm sorry that I. And Radharani said, no, you. If I actually had love for you, if I really had love for you, then I would have died, she said. So she was criticizing herself that actually her love was not so great, because if it was, so of course, that's also in the last verse of the Chaitanya of Shikshastakam that is mentioned there as well. So these types of intense separation are exhibited. And the pure devotees in our line, they teach about these things. So on our platform, we can say at least we should be in separation of higher consciousness, of our better meditations. And we should understand that when we are not in such higher consciousness, because we're not hankering enough. And Srimati Radharani also says in one part of the scripture, in the Kushmanjali, Raghunath Das's works, that if you do not hanker for me, then I cannot give you my association. Because in her platform of sacrifice, it's so intense that those that want to associate with her and her devotees have to have that intensity. So Prabhupada was teaching this in his, you can see his own sacrifice. He was so intense, wasn't he? I mean, Prabhupada was very intense in his devotional service. There was no messing. So this intensity has to come about in various, oh, you're bringing flowers to Krishna? Very nice. You go and give them to Krishna. That's very nice. Perfect. This is pure bhakti. So, yes, this is learning the right thing there. So this intensity of services we have to learn through chanting, but that intensity is descending upon us by the blessings of the pure devotee. So this material world, which is discussed in this verse, this is a place where we have a different type of intensity. It's an intense desire to enjoy sense gratification. So Prabhupada does say in the purport here, something quite interesting. Is there a way to do that? Let's see what it is. The temporary creation is thus exhibited and destroyed just to give information to the conditioned soul who is attached to material things. I think that this material world, you could say, is a reflection, it's said, is a reflection. So everything we see here, we can see Krishna in it. Whenever we see, perhaps, it's like a reflection of something. Whenever we see a bunch of friends together enjoying their friendship and having fun together. You can see this is, Krishna's giving you a taste. Yeah, this is a reality. It's a reality in the spiritual world, but here's a flavor of something. Or young lovers are there. It's a flavor of something that's going on somewhere. There's something there. Or the relationship between the mother and so on and so forth. This is the flavor. And Krishna, we're here to learn lessons, but also to see things. And one who sees me in everything in me, I'm never lost to him. He's never lost to me. So if you see this world in this way, you cannot deny the young lovers. You cannot deny it. You cannot shut your eyes like the impersonal Mayavadis try to do. But you have to understand, yes, where is the perfectionist? Oh, this is exhibited in the spiritual realm. Radha Krishna Nitya Leela is going on. But we have to understand that Leela in the proper way through the Acharyas, the eternal Leelas of Radha Krishna, and also the Leelas in Dwarka and the Leelas in Mathura, and any other Leelas that you might become attracted to. Krishna is exhibiting all these Leelas. So the fact is that we have to reorientate ourselves and place ourselves and our consciousnesses in that place. And the idea of the sadhus is that they have come to teach us. And the interesting thing about this verse, before we finished classes here, because I've been going a bit off track here, the fact that the living entity has come into this material world, you know, through Sadashiva, Durga Devi, Ramadevi, the yoni and the lingam. The lingam is said to be the living entities being pushed into the material world, into the yoni or the material nature. But the interesting thing that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta says in his commentary on the Brahma Samhita is that, broadly speaking, we do not know how to enjoy even matter. The living entity, he is so dependent on God that he has to be taught how to enjoy the material world, practically speaking. So you'll find that the Durga Devi and Sadashiva, and they're teaching it. Oh, you want to enjoy it? This is how to enjoy it. In that sense, Krishna says, you're wandering in the heart, I'm reminding you of how to enjoy. You want to enjoy it? This is how to enjoy. How do we know how to enjoy material energy? We do not know. Therefore, Krishna is teaching us, well, this is how to have a separate existence. But also, how do we know how to do it otherwise? What is it? Because we are conditioned souls. We are fragmental parts. We know nothing of these energies. So Krishna has to teach us how to be a Maya almost. So Sadashiva and Durga Devi and the Maya, this combination and this the time aspect, once the time enters the Mahatattva and the living entity is injected into it, activity begins. And an interesting thing is that when the activity begins, the expansion begins. You know, sometimes the scientists talk about the expansion of the universe. The expansion of the universe is not just a physical thing. It's not physical laws that cause the expansion of the universe. It is the consciousness that causes the expansion of the universe, because the consciousness acting in free will has various desires, and his desires have to be fulfilled. And as he desires, so the material energy works around him. We didn't get into the topic here, but quantum physics and all that is connected to this, because the two slits experiment in quantum physics seems to parallel the idea that your consciousness affects matter. So as you desire, your subtle desires are accumulating in your mind. You want this, you want that, you want this and that and the other, and you've reacted like this and this way, you've reacted like that. and already a set of circumstances are already building for you in the possibilities of the atomic world. So the atomic world is said to be a world of endless possibilities. No one knows what the future holds. You know what the past has been, and you know what's going on now, but no one knows what the future holds. But Krishna knows what the future holds because he builds your body for you. And all these things, and Prabhupada once commented on the material universe, it's like a large machine. It's like a machine, it's all interconnected. And there's much information. For instance, if you get a computer chip, you'll find how much information is on one little microchip. So much information, isn't it? So if we can do that in the material world, what to speak of God? Krishna, he can hold, there's engineering in place that holds your subtle energy, and the gross energy is following you. So this is what's going on in the material world, but the scientists don't really fully accept that because it's beyond their comprehension. But that's why it says here that in the beginning of this verse, it says, Prabhupada says, the clouds are there, then the clouds dissipate, and then, so similarly, the living entity, he is manifest, and then he appears to dissipate. But Prabhupada says the clouds appear to dissipate, but they haven't really dissipated. They're just in another form, aren't they? In vapor form. And then they come together again. So our subtle desires and our subtle activities, they don't really disappear. They just manifest in another form, in a more subtle form. And then when the creation is time to create again, that information in the subtle form again links with this material world through the atoms, through the elements, through the compounds, and it builds your body and your circumstances. But this engineering is so wonderful and so beyond the comprehension that of the modern world, of modern scientists, that they think, no, this is impossible. It can't be. It can't be. But actually, this is what's going on, and it's described in the scripture. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Maharaj says these things in the second canto of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna speaks about the soul. He says, yes, death, it's not that the living entity is still existing in a subtle form. Because when you die, your desires and your intelligence will stay with you, isn't it? It's not that your soul is finished and nothing else stays with you. Your subtle energy stays with you. So it's like the clouds, they dissipate. Anyway, it's quite an interesting topic. And another example is at nighttime you can see the clouds. But how can you see the clouds? By the light of the moon, you can see the clouds. Right? At night, the moon is there, the clouds are seen. But how do you see the clouds? You see the clouds by the light of the moon. So similarly, our consciousness, our mind and our intelligence is covered like the clouds are covering the moon. The clouds are covering the moon, but by the light of the moon you can see the clouds. So similarly, the consciousness is covered by the mental system, but by the light of the soul you can see the consciousness. You can understand, yes, I have a consciousness, I have a mind, I have intelligence. These things are connected to... But this material consciousness... it is only destroyed, you could say, when the material mind and the material intelligence is given up and the spiritual mind. Anyway, we won't go into too much detail on that. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions, any comments on these things? Or, yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for your class, Prabhu. I just had one question about Vrindavan consciousness. You're saying we can, you know, this is a reflection of the spiritual world.
Yeah.
So like that, we can see Krishna in everything.
Yeah.
So for our own consciousness, you know, I can look at, I don't know, you know, this flower on the floor, this lotus flower. I can see Krishna like that. But as far as bringing specifically Vrindavan consciousness to the wider society in general, maybe not even just spiritual knowledge, but Vrindavan consciousness, because this is our destination, ideally. I guess what would you say? How can we bring that consciousness to the people in general, or just helping each other to be in more of a spirit of Vrindavan?
Say that again.
How would you suggest bringing consciousness of Vrindavan to the society in general, and then also in the Vaishnav community? How would we help other Vaishnavs be in consciousness of Vrindavan?
Of Vrindavan. That's a good question. Yes, I would say that Vrindavan consciousness is a good point that you make, because consciousness, Vrindavan is not a place. It is a state of consciousness. So that's one thing. The conscious, isn't it, Prabhu? Vrindavan is not a place as such. It is a state of consciousness. So when you are in such a state of consciousness, you are in Vrindavan. So how to bring, your question is how to bring that consciousness into here. You have to become a yogi. You have to be yoginam sava, yoginam apasavasham matkatena atmana swaravan. You have to learn to cultivate yoga. So you have to do bhakti yoga. And the real consciousness of Vrindavan comes about in one's deep internal meditations. And there's three types of meditations. One is Smaranam, Vishnu Smaranam. You know Vishnu Smaranam? And then there's something called Spurati. And then there's something called Avivabhav. So there's three types of meditations. Smaranam means you remember the Shastra very well. And through your devotion, your bhakti, that deep smaranam will affect your heart, and you'll get a little inclination of what, a little taste will come. Then, as you're cultivating your consciousness further in your bhakti and your devotion to Sri Guru, and Sri Guru blesses you more, and you practice your yoga, and Krishna becomes pleased with you, then further Vrindavan consciousness will descend in the form of Spurati. That means that you have an internal vision. Your meditation becomes so deep that you're practically within the Leela. This is described in the Kushmanjali. You're practically within the Leela, but as you reach out, you can't quite be with Krishna. He's kind of there, but he's not there. And then Avivabhav means that you're actually in the Leela and you can embrace Krishna. So these three types of meditation are there. It's described in the scriptures. So the Vrindavan consciousness can be brought in through a systematic process of acquiring knowledge and bhakti by associating with sadhus and by pleasing them and by basically working on your mind. You know, like in the Bhagavad Gita, it says, wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering on state, and bring it under the control of self. There's a whole process. And Arjuna says, it's very difficult to control the mind. And Krishna says, yes, it's true. Because Arjuna says, it's more difficult to control the mind than the raging wind. How can you control your mind? It's so difficult. And Krishna admits, yes, it's true, but by practice and by detachment, you can do it. So this Vrindavan consciousness is brought about through the gradual systematic knowledge and practice of bhakti yoga. And from sadhana bhakti comes the processes of practicing raganuga bhakti, more spontaneous devotion. So, Vrindavan consciousness comes about in a systematic way like that. But also, I was saying earlier how you can see reflections, because in the Vedas it says that this is a reflection. All purposes of the Vedas can be served. All purposes of a well can be served by a great reservoir of water. So all purposes of the Vedas could be understood by the person who knows what's behind the Vedas. And what's behind the Vedas is a very, very broad thing, the Vedas. But what's ultimately behind it is Vrindavan consciousness. If you go to South India, you've been to South India yet? You go to South India, they won't necessarily accept Vrindavan consciousness in the sense that, Radha Krishna Nitya Leela, isn't it? They prefer to worship Vishnu in the more of the awe reverence, which is also a wonderful thing. So Vrindavan consciousness is not very easy to understand, even in India, even Ramanujacharya follows and Madhvacharya follows, and it's very difficult to understand it, actually. So really, isn't it, Prabhu? It's a special blessing of Mahaprabhu given, and you have to associate with sadhus who are in that consciousness. Even if the devotees from South India don't understand it, doesn't mean to say it doesn't exist. And therefore, there was debates in Vrindavan about Radharani's position and Krishna's position. People were thinking, Radharani must be married to Krishna. It can't be that they're not married. And there was a debate between some acharyas, wasn't it? And they came to the conclusion. Oh, do you know this, the Lila behind that? I can't. One of the acharyas who was having the debate, he went out and he met one Manjari. So I'm just going to fetch Radharani. And he came to the conclusion, oh, Radharani, she is the wife of Abhimanyu, but yet she's going to. Then it became very clear to him, yes, this Parakya Ras is going on Vrindavan. It was quite a complex matter. But in answer to your question, you have to become yogi, and you have to go through the process of sadhana bhakti, raghana bhakti, and you have to understand how real meditation works. But also, you can look at the world and with knowledge get a glimpse of something here, and it's said that this is a reflection of the reality of the spiritual realm. So you will find things here that exist in the spiritual world, particularly in relationships. I'll finish off by saying that the essence of life is relationships and love. So that is the whole essence of life. And that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is Rasaraj. He is the supreme exchanger of ras, or bliss. He just loves to exchange ras with people. And you can see that with some people, they just love to be with other people having exchanges. And sometimes some people don't like that because they find it, it's not very tasteful, because the type of ras that are in the material world is somewhat, it's tinged with other things, with self-motivation. But the pure ras, which is exhibited in the spiritual world, there is no inebrieties. It is full of bliss and love, and this is what's depicted in Goloka Vrindavan. So sometimes I have a tendency to be more impersonal, probably. When I came to this world, even as a child, I was thinking, all these people are so much of a nuisance to me. I was probably a Mayavadi in my last life, therefore I want to withdraw from everything. But I shouldn't withdraw. I should come into the people and, isn't it, exchange love and experience that. But because of our experiences of love previously, we might be a little bit not inclined to do so because we think we're going to get hurt here, exploited here. So but I'm afraid I'm still tinged by such things, therefore I'm a little withdrawn. It's okay sometimes. But actually, we should. You can also be withdrawn, but at the same time, be cultivating something higher as well. But the symptom of a sadhu is, who's really experiencing these higher tastes, he's very blissful. He's very friendly, isn't it? He's very friendly, he's very blissful, he's very forthcoming. You can see, you associate with these sadhus. That's just their nature. They're full of... So, yes, something I have to cultivate further. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Bhaktivedanta ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivedanta ki jai.